We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Boonwurrung people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging, and Aboriginal people who are listening. We acknowledge that sovereignty was never ceded.
Good morning. You are on Joy Weekend Breakfast with me, Demetra Janakopoulos, and...
And me, Jean.
The amazing Jean.
The amazing. Good morning. How
Good
are you?
Good morning. Oh, wow. Like it's Saturday. Yahoo! July in Melbourne, Nam.
Very
cold. Actually, I want to start saying Nam Melbourne because Nam was first.
That's true.
Yeah. Nam Melbourne. So you can catch me out if I don't say it in the right order.
All right.
But yeah.
I'll give
wonderful.
You a slap in the face.
you must have a long reach because, you know, we're across the desk. So you can see exactly the dynamics. And in case Jean decides to slap me in the face, we are on live stream. At what is it, joy.org.au/live.
Yeah, although I think it's only you that they can see.
Oh, really?
I have no idea. We'll check in the break.
Oh, really? Oh.
Anyway.
Trust me, the Jean is here. I think she's, you blacked it out, haven't you?
You can hear me.
I can hear you. It's just in case there's any violence, it's, there's no evidence.
Oh, right. And there will be. And there will be.
Just, we've started well already. How was your week, mate?
How was your week?
How was my week?
Tennis is on, so you must be frothing at the bit.
Oh, my God. You've remembered.
I keep hearing it on the news, and Demetra's obsessed. People, if you've never met Demetra or just joined us, she's a tennis nut.
I am. I have tried to work on this. I've gone to Tennis Anonymous.
Therapy?
And therapy. I have tried to address this, but I can't help it.
What do they do in therapy? Just hit balls at your head?
Pretty much.
Whack
you
with
the
racket.
You start to hate a tennis ball, the side of a tennis ball. But it ain't going to happen, peeps. Although I do question my commitment because Wimbledon's on at the moment. It is, you know, we're in Australia, we're in the opposite time zone, well, 8 hours difference. It starts about 10 o'clock in the morning. It's so, as in UK time. So a little bit tricky for me, unless I've had a nana nap or a pussy nap, to watch it. But tonight is the women's final.
Yeah,
and it's between, and you just heard it on the news actually, Iga Swiatek and Amanda Anisimova. And Amanda, this is why I love tennis.
Okay? I've stopped listening.
Well, Amanda Anisimova took some time out for mental health issues.
Okay.
She's back. Well, I nearly swore then. She's in the final of Wimbledon. This is why tennis is a great sport.
Oh, good for her and admitting that she's done that.
Yes.
All right, now I'm listening.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was brilliant.
Great story. And this is I think, one of the things I love about tennis is you can be down and out at any point in the match, but you can always come back. It ain't over till it's over.
You know what? That's like a – you can relate that to life.
Tennis is life. So you by the end of this season, because we've just started grid two.
Yeah.
And all the second week grid two,
mm-hmm.
And oh my God, you are your eyes are glazing over. You will love tennis by the end of the grid. Anyway, what have you been doing this week?
I like tennis. I told you.
Oh, okay.
I'll have a hit with you.
All right.
I like playing.
Okay. Well, I'm pretty good though.
Like, oh, hello.
You're tall and got long arms and. You're faster than me, I know that.
And I think it depends on fitness too. I'm pretty, I'm very unfit at the moment. Anyway. I went to boxing this week and realised that I'm just need to get out more and do some more. Do you know there's this,
with the boxing.
There's a statistic, right? Are you ready? Have I said this already? Anyway. 1% of people over the age of 40 will ever sprint again.
Wow.
Think about that.
That's frightening.
But it's true, right? Only 1% of people over the age of 40.
1%?
Yeah. So
that's an alarming. Australia or, I mean, do you remember, like, if it's Australia or?
I can't. I probably should have fact-checked it too.
Well, you've read this. You've read it there.
I read it somewhere.
Wow. You know, it's frightening because I've taken a break from tennis for a variety of reasons, not that I'm happy about. And tennis is sprinting and I can't even sprint for the tram now. And I'm really scared about that.
Well, you need to be that 99. Wait, that 1%.
I need to be that 1%.
Let's go sprinting.
I did play tennis after 40.
Yep.
So
we are in the 1%.
Yeah.
That have sprunt.
Sprunt. Okay, for your English lessons, turn off now.
I knew it was wrong when I said it anyway.
Grammar.
Also, it's.
Thank you for bringing that to my attention because it's something to work on.
It is. Get out there and sprint, people. Yep. Just start slowly. Just start with a jog. But, it's a lot of people jog.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't do that fast sprinting.
Yeah, as when you're like running kids do. For that drop
they're
shot.
Just, all they're doing is sprinting around and around. And then adults, we just slow down and we get lazy and...
Well, if you don't use it, you lose it. 100%. I'm living proof of that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, thank you, Vince Byard me. And let me tell you, boxing is very much like tennis.
And boxing and tennis are really good for the aging mind.
Oh, okay.
Playing
Explain.
Racket sports and learning boxing. Because you've got to do the hand-eye coordination and it's strategic. So you're using your brain. It's not just like jogging. It's different. You're learning a skill, and so that's good for the aging brain.
Yeah. I suppose it is problem solving. See, like just like tennis. Tennis is problem solving.
Mm.
Yes, you need skill, like boxing and fitness, absolutely.
But then you also need to learn the skill of how to swing the racket and the backhand and how to hold, grip the thing and blah blah blah. Yeah.
And not to mention the fun of it. I mean,
it's fun.
I know that there's all the trash talking before, you know, your big famous boxing match, but they all seem to hug at the end.
And there's they actually generally like each other, I think, behind the scenes, yeah. And there's actually a big women's fight I think it's in America tonight. Serrano versus Taylor. So I'm saving it. Wait, I think it was on last night. So don't give it away because I don't have my kids until Sunday. And Nevi, my little daughter, I've got her into boxing. So we're saving it. I'm going to watch it together.
Super.
Yeah, so it's nice.
And boxing is an Olympic sport. Could Nevi be looking at Olympic? I mean, she's look at that. Just let the child enjoy the sport. But, hey.
No. She's winning a gold medal and she's also, you know, she's my meal ticket, mate.
I love it. I'll be there cheering, mate. We're on the mates
mate,
already.
Mate.
I'll be there cheering.
What else? Oh, well, I've also, I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm 94% sure I have had lice.
Oh.
It's school holidays at the moment too, which is every parent's worst nightmare.
How far does lice jump?
Apparently pretty far.
Oh, no. I'm scratching already.
Do you know that they've become super bugs?
So the
traditional like anti-lice shampoo, the nits have like evolved for it to be the shampoo to be ineffective.
That's scary.
Yeah.
So what do we do?
Like shave my head, but that doesn't even work.
I have
work.
A friend who wants to know if my friend gets nits.
Well, my hair's tied up really tight and there's lots of hairspray in it, so hopefully then it's contained. And I actually don't think I do because...
I'm itching already.
I know. See, that's because one of my kids had it, then I started itching and convincing myself and I've got no one in the house to check. Anyway, whatever. That's another thing.
See, this is what we need AI and robots for. To check for nits. No one talks about
or
that.
Or a husband or a wife with good eyesight. Someone else in my house, apart from the children. We haven't even introduced the topic, people. We're going to a song and then we'll introduce the topic. You're on Joy. It's We're All Made of Stars, Miami Horror, Telenova.
How's that for lovely sentiment? You're on Joy Weekend Breakfast.
Good morning. You are listening to Joy 94.9, in particular, Joy Weekend Breakfast with me, Jean, and...
Oh, with me, Demetra.
The lovely. I always say lovely.
Lovely. Thank you.
I'm trying to...
You know me now for a while, so it's, you know, it's... You're not just saying it. Mate, you freaked me out with the lice.
Yeah, if you just joined us, I announced before that it's school holidays and I may or may not have head lice.
And I thought, well, as your fellow
and Demetra is freaking out.
I'm freaking out.
They're not going to jump. My hair's tied very tightly back.
That's what they all say. And I did have a couple of thoughts, and I thought, am I such a good co-host that I'm going to offer to check for you?
And I said you need to have seriously good vision.
Well, I brought my reading glasses.
Okay, magnifying glass. It's those eggs, man. We had a couple of texts about the nits. Dom has said,
freaking out.
"Morning, thanks, people. I'm driving along, scratching my head. Lol." I also have no to check lice, no one to check lice, but I have an have had an idea. Going to have to get a pet monkey.
That's exactly the image I had, Dom, of if we started checking each other's lice.
That's what you feel like.
And the studios are glass, so it's kind of like at the zoo.
Yeah,
you could kind of watch us.
Little Jay said, oh, my God, lice in the studio, burn the headphones.
Yeah, we'll have to do a bit of a...
Now my body's itchy. Maybe it's not lice. Maybe it's something else. Anyway.
Would you look, this is a question that I came up and nearly choked whilst I'm having a sip of water. Would you invite your ex to come and check your lice?
Well, the father of me kids, last time we had it, this time last year, school holidays as well, he had to put the stuff in my hair. When I picked up the kids, I was like, can you just put it in my hair?
That's a good ex.
Well, is it? Or is it him not wanting to keep the lice perpetuate?
Either way, I think that's a good ex.
All right, we must move
on. We need to introduce our topic because it's a hell of a topic.
We always pick topics and then we dig in and we go, oh, there's this whole other angle to this.
Yeah.
So Demetra bought this book and I saw it when I came into the studio for our production meeting because it's beautifully illustrated and it's called Rainbow History Class, Your Guide Through Queer and Trans History. And when she bought it and I saw it, I was like, ooh. And so I went and bought it and I read it and I loved it.
Yeah.
And it's written by Hannah Mickelhenny, and we're lucky enough to have Hannah joining us at 9 o'clock. Woo-hoo. And so
we're both fangirls because we've each got our own copy.
Yeah, I've dog-eared mine and write in it, and Demetra hates that.
I don't write in my books.
No, never. What if it's a tech, like a study textbook?
No, never.
What do you mean never?
Well, actually, no, there's probably a couple of books. Well, not a couple, but...
Yeah, underline?
No, I don't. I don't mark my books.
Why?
I don't know. Good question.
It is a good question.
There's a whole other topic.
You never dog-ear. A lot of people don't dog-ear.
I've started to. I think that's your influence. I'm not sure if that's a good influence.
Why? Dog earing is very helpful. Although this book is kind of, the paper's too nice. It's not, it's kind of quite thick, the paper. So when you dog ear, it doesn't return to its original flatness when it's undog eared.
Which book would?
A book with thin paper? Anyway.
But on dog earing, you must have dog-eared some or underlined or marked somehow this book because you haven't stopped talking about this book, and it is a while ago that
we've had it for a while. Yeah. Well, it just – because it it's an exploration of queer history, and it just shows – it spans from ancient civilizations to now, and, you know, it just goes into such a deep dive. And what I was really interested in is the ancient cultures and the indigenous cultures and how prevalent and accepted it was to be queer. And so this book written by Hannah Mickelhenny, I hope I'm saying that right, Hannah, you can correct me when you come in, but I'll just say Hannah. This book, because we know each other. this book written by Hannah, so it aims to illustrate the often overlooked narratives of the queer and trans individuals throughout history, because obviously, you know, and we're going to get into this as one of our little topics about who writes history. Mm. And so it addresses the complex relationships between Christianity and the Bible interpretations and how that's affected the LGBTQIA+ community. And then we decided that we're like, when did it change?
Yeah, this was the thing that came up as we're talking about this.
Yeah.
You know, what are we going to talk about in the show?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the question that sort of really piqued our interest, which was, well, when did it all go silent? And
yeah, so
why did it go silent?
When
removed from history?
Yeah. Well, and because, for example, in ancient Greece, same-sex relationships, you know, they were common and culturally embedded. Male-male relationships, especially between an older man and a younger man. They were socially accepted as part of like mentorship, education, and military bonding. And, you know, we did Sappho, the Isle of Lesbos.
Yes.
We talked about that on Radiothon. And, ancient Rome, it was also same-sex acts that they were widely accepted.
Yes.
In South Asia, there's...
Sorry to interrupt you, but that was the biggest revelation. I mean, it's ridiculous that I say that it was the biggest revelation that in Asia there are also queer people.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're about to say, in Asia, the book talks about famous queer people, you know, emperors and others, and trans people as well.
Yeah, that were in same-sex relationships, and it was completely accepted and part of you know, religion and society. And yeah, so another example is in South Asia and India. They're called the Hijara. And they're a recognised third gender. Mm. So they're a community that's existed in India for thousands of years, and they're often considered neither male nor female. So you're either born as a female, but you display masculine energy and whatever behaviours, whatever that is. And, you know, the Hijara people in those communities were often, you know, they were held as sacred people in rituals, in blessings, weddings, births. And then obviously we'll get onto this, but colonization came in and it all messed it all up.
Yeah, to put it mildly. Yep.
And
not just that, but so much else, as we are discovering.
Yes.
Because history is starting to be uncovered, that has been covered.
Mm-hmm. Another indigenous culture. So I don't know if you've heard of the Two-Spirit in North America. So the Two-Spirit is it's an indigenous term. It's used to describe people with both masculine and feminine spirits. So that they were also, those people, the Two-Spirited people, they were also held as respected roles as healers, shamans, matchmakers and warriors. So they had, there was so much gender fluidity. It wasn't binary like it is today.
No, and just on the Two-Spirit, and that was something I discovered maybe perhaps last year on another show in the beginning, which I'll mention in a moment, do a shout out on that. The show, we talked about the history of LGBT, the acronym, right? Because when Joy started, it was just gay and lesbian radio.
Yeah.
And now it's LGBTIQA+. In particularly North America, there was the 2S, and I didn't know what that was until I checked it out, to acknowledge the Two-Spirit people within the LGBTIQA+ community. So
Wait, say that again.
Yeah, So we say, I mean, and particularly at Joy, we use the acronym LGBTIQA+, try and be as inclusive as possible.
Mm-hmm.
In North America, I discovered 2S added to the
acronym. Another letter.
Yeah, to the number 2 and S.
Ah, right.
And I didn't know what that was.
Right.
Until
Two-Spirits.
Thank you to the internet. It was Two-Spirit, and then the book also talks about this concept of Two-Spirit, and as you say, was well regarded, honoured in the societies.
It talks about the Egyptian society, and it talks about a potential trans Egyptian mummy that they've uncovered.
Right.
Read the book, people. It's great. It's really great.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about who writes history and what impact that has.
Yeah.
We've got a couple of messages come in. Still about the lies.
It feels like it's a topic that has...
We could do a whole show on me lies.
No, we're not going to do a whole show on lies. I can't imagine that one. But we need to take a break. I mean, there's just, again, we've opened up this discussion that... I'm scratching. We've opened up a discussion that, you know, brings up such as who writes history. And yes, we could go through the whole history and this would be a show that would last 24/7 the rest of the year. But let's go for a break.
Yeah, and the point of who writes history.
Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Well, as I said, the reason this book had such an impact, because in my mind I was like, this being queer has been going on for thousands and thousands of centuries in all different cultures. And then something changed. And it's the writers of the history that have something to do with it.
Mm.
Yes. So stay with us, people. You're on Joy 94.9 with Jean and Demetra on Joy Weekend Breakfast. Here is Not Enough by Mia Ray.
You're on Joy Weekend Breakfast with Demetra Giannakopoulos
and Jean Maloney.
Morning.
It is 27 minutes to nine, and today we're talking about
history.
History.
Well, through the lens of queer history, but what that's raised is, well, we're posing this question around why did we get erased, and it's brought us to who writes a history.
Because we both are obsessed with this book, and the author, we're lucky enough to have the author Hannah McElhenney coming into the studio at 9 o'clock, and it's called Rainbow History Class, Your Guide Through Queer and Trans History. And when I read it, I was just blown away about, and I just didn't know it, about how culturally accepted it was in ancient times to have same-sex relationships and to be gender fluid. Like, it baffled me. And then in my mind, I was like, when did it become bad? And the book does definitely goes deep dives into when it became bad. And so I thought we would, you know, educate you people.
Ourselves, firstly.
Yeah. And it also leads to the topic of, well, it became bad because of who's writing the history. And so the topic of who writes history, well, it's not about what has happened. It's about who's written it down and why. And, you know, it's got to do with, you know, firstly the elites and the educated.
Right.
So most written history was recorded by wealthy, literate men, often priests, scholars, court historians, colonial administrators. So, you know, a lot of people couldn't read. So it was written by, you know, people, elites and the educated. And it was also written by colonizers and conquerors, you know, empires like the Roman, British, Spanish. They recorded events from their perspective, glorifying their own victories and suppressing or demonizing those that they conquered. Yes. Like, you know, the colonized people of Australia were called savages.
Yeah.
And then also there's men over women. So history has overwhelmingly centered male figures, especially, you know, as warriors, kings, philosophers, politicians, and it's overlooked women's roles as healers and midwives and leaders and artists and rebels. And, you know, they're often ignored and erased. And
it's in the name, right? It's his story.
Yeah.
Like,
I didn't think of that.
All right.
Mm.
Her story,
mm.
Our story, maybe would be appropriate.
Let's change the English language.
Well, why not? English language does change.
It does change. That's true.
And hiding in plain sight. That's what I've realized. Mm.
His story.
It's his story.
Hmm. Interesting. And then you've got the Christians. Well, the Christian norms, which developed, you know, throughout history, and those norms are often erased, criminalized, or rewrote queer and gender diverse people. And, you know, the Christian moral frameworks shaped historical interpretations, often labeling non-Christians and non-heteronormative practices as sinful or uncivilized. And so it matters who writes history because it shapes our identity. And, you know, the stories we're told shape how we understand our culture, our values, and our place in society. And when certain voices are erased or not spoken about, those whole communities lose their connection to their past.
Yeah. on the importance of history, but coming back to who writes it, I'm quite I'm saddened that Christianity seems to be so involved in erasing our story, of women and but also us who don't fit in the binary particularly. I'm sort of coming to this awareness. I'm surprised it's taken me this long. I consider myself a Christian. I mean, faith's important to me. I love what Jesus Christ represented, but far out.
And we're not here to demonize faith whatsoever. But what we're saying is that potentially there's parts of the Bible that have been misinterpreted.
Yep.
And there's also the fact that the Bible's been translated many times by many different people. And as I said, those people that do interpret are the elites and the educated and the colonizers and the conquerors. They're the ones that are interpreting the Bible and translating the Bible.
Well, it's making me think, like I'm just, you know, making me think that, well, there's a difference, the organization versus the actual faith itself, because it's not just Christianity. Our gorgeous Iranian people, for example, this topic brought up for me documentary I saw a while ago, like Iran is a theocracy.
Mm-hmm.
The gorgeous Iranian people are having to deal with that. And the women, that's been a fight for a long time, mm-hmm. particularly the last few years, we've seen that come to the forefront. Let alone, I mean, the LGBTQ, community, our gorgeous Iranian community.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily the Christians, but the Bible has a lot to do with it, and the Bible is obviously used by a lot of other religions.
The early parts of
it. Yeah, the early parts of it. And it's more religion in general that.
Religion or the organisations behind the religion.
Yes. And so the effect really on the marginalised groups is women, you know, they're written out of leadership roles, scientific contributions, black and Indigenous people depicted as uncivilised, and their own oral histories have been discredited or destroyed. Mm. So it's very important that we have a whole diverse range of people recording history.
Yeah, and you know what? We're living through it right now in the US in particular. We do need to take a break, but
we'll come back to what's
happening. We're living history as we speak.
Because it is
what we've just uncovered from so long ago, thanks to the, you know, having one book, I'm sure there are others, but one book that's fallen into our, you know, world. But yeah, we're living history at the moment. We'll talk about that after this break.
And if you want to text in 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au, if you've got any thoughts apart from head lice,
yes,
thoughts on queer history or history in general or who writes history, let us know.
Yeah, or any surprises that you've recently discovered about a historical thing that has come across your way, if you'd like to share it.
Yeah. Let us know. We love hearing from you people. Here's a song by Lost Frequencies. Love is the only thing. You're on Joy Weekend Breakfast.
It heals me when I'm broken. Brings me in from the cold. And in my darkest moments, it illuminates my soul.
Put some joy in your day. Brekkie on Joy.
That's right, you are on Brekkie on Joy. Joy Weekend Breakfast with me, Jean, and
It's Demetra.
Exotic.
I'm exotic now.
Oh, she is. She's a Greek lady.
I'm a Greek lady.
A gorgeous Greek lady. Very proud of her Greek heritage, by the way.
Go on and on about it. Because I get a laugh out of you. That's why I do it.
Oh, I love it so much. And if you go look for our podcast, people, because we do have one, and if you go to the Joy Instagram, you can find us. Or the Joy website, joy.org.au, you'll find us.
/ Joy Weekend Breakfast.
Yeah.
Easy to remember.
Yeah. It's, as I said, it's 2025, people. You'll find us. If you look hard enough.
Well, we've been talking about queer history But more specifically about at what stage and how is it that our queer history has been suppressed for so long? And I just want to read out a wonderful text that we just received, which, you know, helps to give us some insight as well, I think, as to what's going on and why our history gets erased. So mythical traditions build bridges as symbolic signs of peace and harmony in lifestyle. In other communities, force of power and control causing greed and discrimination, suppressing rainbow progress.
That's right.
So if they divide us, then there's a way of controlling us, isn't it?
100%. It's about, yeah, if you silence and control.
So before the break, you know, we were talking about, Jean, you were explaining about how, you know, who writes history, and we're actually living through history now, talking about who writes history. So the United States, our wonderful Americans, you know, there's so many beautiful American people. The government of their day is taking, you know, has gone, has lurched to the right. Mm-hmm. And part of that includes attacking certainly the trans community. And President Trump has been making executive orders, and an order about a month ago was titled Restoring Truth and Sanity to American History. Basically anything that casts American history in a harsh light. And what that has resulted in is, for example, the National Park Service being voluntold to, because they'll lose funding, to remove the reference to the trans people who were part of the Stonewall protests, mm-hmm. Stonewall riots, which really kicked off civil rights mm-hmm. in a big way, big massive way, particularly black trans people. So if you went onto the website 3 months ago, you'd see reference to the trans community being so at the forefront of that dispute. Now it's removed.
They're erasing history.
They're erasing history. Not just that. The Smithsonian museums have been asked, particularly the Women's History Museum, has had to remove, I say, because they've been threatened with losing funding if they don't, to remove reference to trans and trans women in the Women's History Museum. Now, the Smithsonian is a whole lot of different museums. There's about 21 museums and 14 educational research centres. So a really important component of community and culture.
Oh, it's terrible.
We're living this history now, erasure, we're watching it.
And so let's say Trump stays in power for the next, whatever, another term.
Well, technically, he's only allowed to stay another 3 years or 3.5 years.
But let's say it's carried on, right, this anti-trans and erasure of trans and the recognition of there being more than two genders, right? Imagine if that keeps going. So for the next 200 years, all their stories, all their experiences won't be recorded.
No, and we'll all be gone, so there won't be living memory of it.
It's awful.
Yeah. So this is like I love the internet. I love the internet.
The World Wide Web.
I love the World Wide Web. And I felt like a really old person. In fact, this morning I thought to myself, I'm holding Hannah's book and I'm going, thank God we got this book. Right? Because mm-hmm. it's a physical thing.
Right.
Because the internet, I mean, you can't, unless you go and rip out pages, which would be really obvious because they're numbered,
yeah.
you know, if they're missing.
Which has happened in history.
Burning of books, ripping out pages. Banning books. That's also been happening in the US.
It is happening, yes.
Yes. Mm. Yes, it is. We talked about censorship.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we are.
And also in the education system, they're not teaching the fact that there's more than two genders.
Yes.
Yeah. They're not teaching that anymore. They're also teaching black history differently.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are, you know, rewriting history.
Yes.
To suit their own narrative. And then they're enforcing it upon the population through refusing to give funding to public institutions that won't abide by these mandates that they've that they've put out these policies, these executive orders. It's mental, is it? But, it's mental.
Well, it's more than that. It's a way of destroying community. You know, it's a way of like to force the binary, because this whole this whole thing about binary and gender, I'll admit, is a relatively new thing that I've thought about, because it has become, you know, certainly for our community, a really important issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept an open mind, because when I was coming out, I was hoping people would have an open mind about me being a lesbian, right?
Yep.
And
I, you know, a lot of people push back on the, sorry to interrupt you, but a lot of people push back on the non-binary stuff because it became politicized and, you know, changing pronouns and why should I have to change my language, all of that.
Yes.
But part of reading this book also made me realize that it's actually not abnormal.
No.
It's not abnormal.
Being part of
thousands and thousands, and thousands of years, part of being human included gender fluidity.
Yeah. And the amazing thing to read about is, and wonderful, that that what were often referred to as a third gender were, you know, celebrated. Like you mentioned earlier in the show.
Yeah, they were shamans. They were... Yeah. Yeah, all sorts of respected community roles.
Yes. And that's such a beautiful
thing. It wasn't taboo.
But, you know, like our feminine and masculine energy, and I'm thinking about, I always laugh when I think about this, because early on when you and I started doing shows together, we did a lesbian checklist and we had a bit of fun with that. And one of them was being able to lift big objects or heavy objects.
Yeah.
And you said you could do that.
Yeah.
And I was really delighted because I can't lift heavy. I mean, I don't like to lift heavy objects.
Yeah.
And that's what I usually get a bloke for.
Well.
But I've got you. So
you got me.
You got your masculine energy.
And also I realised I had a thought on my drive in, is that particularly in terms of parenting, if I would be the father role.
Interesting.
Because caregiving is not my tendency.
Okay.
And my personality type.
Yeah.
So I would probably be that person in the community that took on the more masculine roles.
Well, like what? Like when you say that, what do you
think? I'd be hunting, baby.
Oh, okay. Like if we went back to the
I wouldn't be hanging out with the kids.
You'd be hunting, yeah.
I'd be hunting.
Well, yeah. What would I be doing? I'd be at home with the kids.
Would you?
Yeah, I reckon.
Making baskets and
100%, I'd be making baskets.
I'd do that too.
I love making baskets.
But it was different, also
for
different.
For you, bringing to when you brought the hunting home, I'd have the basket ready for it.
For me, kill.
For the kill.
Would you watch me skin it?
Oh my god! Well, I have to now.
But the other thing is, as well, when I say that, it would have been a village, and so maybe parenting wouldn't be so difficult because there's help, and. Anyway,
maybe you're touching on something that, well, everyone was part of the community. I mean, I don't know. I didn't live in ancient times, but whether the division or pre-ancient, when I say ancient, I mean before like Greeks, because the Hellenes. Because
what? There were people before Greeks?
There were. Yes, there what? Were, funnily enough.
Really?
But this division of roles and division of masculine and feminine energy, and this is the question that gender has brought up. For me, is mm-hmm. like I have both those components in me and celebrate all of that.
Yeah.
And
it was really, as I touched on before, and we might save it for when Hannah comes in, and just talking about the role of the church and religion and defining those gender roles, that a man and a woman is this and they can only be together and they must be married and blah, 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 yes. blah, 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 blah. Yes, so Hannah is on their way in, and so we might go to a song.
Yeah, and then we've got some news.
We've got some news.
And then we're joined by...
the lovely Hannah McElhinney.
McElhinney, author of Rainbow History Class.
Yeah.
Which has changed our lives, basically.
Yeah, it's changed the way I see the world. You're on Joy.
Joy News. National Radio News.
Good morning, I'm David Cameron. A preliminary report into last month's deadly plane crash in India has found both the fuel control switches were turned off shortly after takeoff. These switches are normally used to turn the engines on and off while the aircraft is on the ground. Attention is now focusing on the actions of the crew. On the cockpit audio recorder, one of the pilots is heard asking why the switches were turned to the cut-off position. The other pilot responds that he hadn't done so. Speaking to the BBC, aviation safety investigator David Gleave says there are several lines of inquiry.
The possibility of some software issue or an electrical arcing problem or something like that causing the signals to the relevant computers from sending that type of signal. Or it could be some form of human deliberate act.
A German backpacker is recovering in a Perth hospital after being found alive almost 2 weeks since she went missing in the WA outback. 26-year-old Carolina Vilga was found walking on a bush track in the Karoon Hill Reserve by a member of the public late yesterday. Police Inspector Martin Glynn says she was airlifted to Perth for medical attention after enduring freezing overnight temperatures and mosquito bites in the tough terrain.
You obviously always go out with the best of hope that you will find the person and obviously this is a great outcome for everyone involved.
UNESCO has approved World Heritage listing for West Australia's Murujuga Rock Art. The site contains the world's largest, densest and most diverse collection of rock art engravings known as petroglyphs, and some are estimated to be more than 50,000 years old. There have been concerns the rock art was being impacted by emissions from Woodside's nearby gas project, which has been granted a 40-year extension by the federal government. In Paris for the decision, Mata Thunera woman and Murujuga custodian Raylene Cooper says it's been a long time coming.
It's just great. I'm sorry, I can't get a smile off my face and I'm really happy for everybody. But look, definitely worthy of this status. It should have happened a long time ago.
A third of children in Australian schools can't read proficiently. A regional reading event is hoping to uncover a new generation of readers. Australian and international best-selling authors are in the southern New South Wales city of Wagga Wagga for today's Riverina Readers Festival. Founder of the event, Melissa Fattore, says it's not just a celebration of reading, but a way for younger members of the community to appreciate the pastime.
There's that wraparound support and encouragement to continue building your reading skills and also meet those authors that you really admire when they write those stories that help transport you when you're in your living room and you're reading a brand new book. I think for our younger generation, it's an exciting opportunity to be inspired.
The US President and First Lady are visiting Central Texas, where flash floods last week killed 120 people. The worst-hit area received several months' rain in a few hours, engulfing a girls' summer camp and sweeping away homes and cars. Donald Trump says it's hard to believe the scale of the disaster.
I've never seen anything like it. I've seen a lot of bad ones. I've gone to a lot of hurricanes, a lot of tornadoes. I've never seen anything like this. This is a bad one. We just visited with incredible families that, look, they've been devastated. A little narrow river that becomes a monster.
National Radio News, produced by Charles Sturt University, the Community Radio Network, and supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation.
You're on Joy Weekend Breakfast with me, Demetra.
And me, Jean Maloney. Welcome. If you've just joined us, welcome.
Yeah, well, we've been talking about history and particularly, like, why did our history get erased pretty much? And we've been inspired by a book called Rainbow History Class and the author's on their way,
yeah,
on their way in, which is really wonderful to have Hannah McElhenney in the studio.
Yep, to talk about
that. Stay tuned,
because there's a lot to say. It's a very deep topic.
Well, yeah. I mean, we've really focused in on about, you know, who writes history and the politicisation of history. I would want to do a shout out to a former co-host, the amazing Chris Furneaux. Well, I'm saying amazing, but when I ask him, do you listen to the show, he goes, oh, well, actually, I wake up at about 9:45 so I can listen to Sat Mag. Thanks a lot, Chris. But I bumped into Chris. I know, right? But I bumped into Chris yesterday and I was explaining to him what we were talking about today. And he reminded me and printed off some information about Karl Heinrich Ulrichs, who coined, who's given the honor of coining the expression homosexual. He was a German politician, and it was part of the discussion of decriminalizing homosexuality. And it's also referenced in Hannah's book at page 90 specifically.
Oh, there you go.
Also, the word lesbianism turned up in a The year on homosexuality being used as a word was in the, oh, goodness, I've just lost the 1869 or thereabouts, so a while ago. But even earlier in that, 1732, lesbianism was probably the first time it was recorded as being used in a poem.
A poem.
In a poem. Was it by William Sappho? King. Well, maybe, but been reincarnated as William King. It was called The Toast, uses lesbian loves and tribidism. I haven't heard that word for a while. That, I think that was an old term for lesbians. She loved women in the same manner as men love them. She was a tribad. Never heard that. I've heard that term once, but it hasn't really stuck. And sapphism was coined in about 1773. There was a lot going on in the late 1770s. But also a special treat, because Chris and I did a show called In the Beginning, which covered the 30-year story of Joy, and that you can find on the podcast In the Beginning on the Joy website. But Chris reminded me of my favourite sting. I think this is the earliest sting we've found. We've loaded it up into the system. It's from 1995. Joy started in 1993. This is from 1995.
You should see Demetra's face.
Oh, I'm so excited.
She's so happy. She's about to cry.
Hit it.
Her head's about to pop off. Okay, here we go.
Woo! How gorgeous is that?
I loved it. It had a bit of like a black kind of, you know, choir.
Yeah, it's the gospel.
Gospel, yeah, yeah, yeah.
1995.
Sounded pretty good.
Back when Joy was 90.7. Sorry, mate, I interrupted you.
That's all right. I don't even know where I was going. Where were we going?
You enjoyed that, didn't you?
I loved it. Loved it.
Yeah. So, you know, Joy's done its bit for history. And I was so excited Clayton's got the show History Repeating, which is highlighting some of the absolute gems from the Joy vault, which are on the website. I mean, this is the beauty of the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're talking about rainbow history, but then we sort of delved into who writes history and the effect of that. And in terms of queer history, really my interest was that, you know, it was so prevalent and so accepted and just so part of human nature for thousands and thousands of years. And then when did it stop?
Yep.
And so, you know, most of it is through the reliance on a few passages from the Bible and a few stories from the Bible. And I won't go into that. Maybe we'll get Hannah to explain, the author of Rainbow History Class, to explain, because there's some, you know, there's debate over those passages and stories and what they actually mean and were they lost in translation and yada, yada, yada. And so the church relied on the Bible and, you know, in the medieval church, which, you know, was primarily the Roman Catholic Church in Western Europe. And, you know, there was that, which was a very powerful institution that significantly influenced all aspects of life during the Middle Ages. And so after the fall of the Western Roman Empire, the medieval church came to power. They declared sodomy a mortal sin, which included things I won't say at 8, 9 o'clock.
And noted it not just between men, but also between men and women. It was all included.
Yeah, and it was equated homosexuality with heresy, punishable by death or excommunication. And then following the Middle Ages, we've got the Renaissance, and the Protestant reformers, so Martin Luther and John Calvin, reinforced the rigid gender and sexual norms mm-hmm. that they found written in the Bible. Mm-hmm. And they promoted marriage between a man and a woman as God's natural order. And they condemned same-sex relations as corrupt and dangerous. And then you've got colonial Christianity. So, you know, European colonizers, they came and they exported their homophobic theology and their laws. So they made a lot of laws.
Yeah, but I think I'm realizing maybe it's even bigger than simply homosexuality. It's about gender. Like it's really exacerbating the binary.
And the gender roles.
Yeah, and I'd forgotten. In fact, it was this morning I remembered watching a documentary a long time ago. It was an Iranian documentary back from 2008, and it was called I got my notes here. It was a documentary about how there was a here we are, like Be Like Others. And in Iran, the authorities had issued an order, a fatwa, saying you couldn't be homosexual, it was punishable by death, but you could become trans, you could transition to be a female.
Right.
And, I mean, this is 2008, and I know that the situation's quite dire for our Iranian friends, but that's always stuck in my head, why? And I just wonder if it was reinforcing the binary.
Well, because it's okay to be one or the other. You just can't be this middle ground.
Yeah, and it's free. I mean, I found it free. PBS is an American mm-hmm. public broadcasting. I think you can find it on the internet free if you search Be Like Others. Yeah. So that really, really did my head in. I just wonder if that's the answer. It's about binary. It's about the binary.
I think that might be right. It's not, yeah, it's not just about, you know.
Women loving women or men loving men.
No. So, for example, you know, when these countries were colonized, and we talked before about the Two-Spirit and the Hijara, indigenous people that were, you know, we would call them non-binary. They had both male and female. They're like a third gender.
Yeah.
And they were celebrated in those indigenous communities and they were leaders. And then colonization happened and imposed Christian sexual morality on these people. And they imposed the pre-existing gender diverse and queer affirming traditions.
Yeah. Yeah.
They got rid of all of that.
Yeah.
They got rid of all of that. Yeah.
Well, this is quite astonishing from a veil has dropped from my, you know, field of focus.
You know what? It'd be really interesting to hear from a Christian who's a queer Christian. And their interpretation of the Bible and Christianity. And
well, maybe that should be. Maybe we should invite someone or at least one other to the show. I mean, we have a wonderful show called Open Table, mm-hmm. Craig Brown, who interviews guests in our community and discusses their faith and, you know, traversing being of faith and being in the LGBTIQA+ community.
Well, yeah, there are queer theologians and queer Christians today.
Of course.
And they do say that the Bible has been misinterpreted and weaponized. And they also say that Jesus never spoke against queerness.
Yes.
And they say that love, justice, inclusion, and dignity are central to faith.
Yes.
And they say that queer people have always been part of God's story, even if they were erased from the page. Mm. So, yeah. They're about.
And there are lots of organisations who are, you know, about affirming Christianity. That's a phrase that's used, which is a really beautiful phrase. And a documentary I've come across, which is called 1946, The Mistranslation That Shifted Culture. And you can get that online. And and it talks about how in 1946, when the Bible was retranslated,
who retranslated it?
It was a bunch of scholars at Yale University, and they actually realized they actually made a mistake in the way they translated from the Greek, right?
So it was
the
written,
Bible was originally written in Greek.
Yeah.
It was one of the main languages. I think Aramaic maybe, but I don't know, Greek definitely. And they mistranslated I'm not going to get into the detail. You need to, you know, please check out this amazing documentary. But the word for soft or young, or, you know, because you talked about how in ancient Greece there was male and female, but not male and female, two men. It was translated as homosexual rather than a proper translation of, I should have had this in front of me, but it was taking a Greek word and mistranslating it to call it homosexual.
Yes.
Rather than like a young and innocent sort of thing.
Yes. And that's
shaped the antagonism towards our community.
Well, yes. And that's the argument that's to be made, is that these passages and stories that are relied on in the Bible that are anti-queer have actually been misinterpreted or, not written in the context with which we read them today.
Well, dare we say it, or dare I say it, was the Bible translation a politicisation of the Bible? I mean, we're seeing Christianity being politicised against us. I mean, just so recently, and it still is in Australia, definitely around the same-sex marriage postal vote, most of the religious organisations, say all, because some were supportive of our community, but most of them across all the faiths were against us having equal rights to marriage. So they could agree on that. For some reason.
And it also comes back to the people that are translating these stories and these phrases from the Bible, again, are the elites and the educated, the colonizers and the conquerors. They were the people that were doing the translations. Yeah.
Yep.
So they translated it to a narrative to suit their purposes, which usually involved money, power, greed, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Well, as a Christian, it really, Jesus just spread such a beautiful message of love everyone, treat everyone equally, and at its core.
And allegedly he never said anything bad about queerness.
My understanding is no.
Hmm. We've had a few text messages come in. People are loving this debate.
Well, it's wonderful to hear from everyone.
Maybe we'll go to a quick break.
Let's go to a break.
And then we'll read some texts.
Yeah, thank you.
And the lovely Hannah McElhinney, who wrote the book, can come in and clarify the clunky way that I've described it.
Well, there's so much to it. It's not clunky at all. There's just so much to it. There's so many nuances. But by the way, Rainbow History Class is really beautifully written, easy to read with pictures.
It is, and it's illustrated beautifully. And, the way that with every sort of historical event, there's a know your icon. So she throws in a historical icon. It's really, really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Have a read, people.
Fans. You can tell we're fans.
Yeah, we can tell we're fans. Very excited. Oh, we got some Miley Cyrus. Yes. You ready for this?
It's a new song, I think.
End of the World. You're on Joy.
You're on Joy Weekend Breakfast with me, Demetra Giannakopoulos.
And me, Jean Maloney. Welcome, people. It is 29 minutes past 9. And if you've just joined us, the topic for today has been Rainbow History, based on a book that Demetra and I are obsessed with. And then we sort of moved into history generally and who writes it and, you know, how that affects things. And we actually have the author of the book here with us. So the book's title is called, hang on, picking up me book, me hardcover, and Hannah signed it for us. It's Rainbow History Class, Your Guide Through Queer and Trans History. Hannah, welcome. Hannah McElhinney.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for coming in.
I'm totally fangirling. This is really great because the book is so important. And I have to ask, what was the inspiration to write the book?
I think it's something that I didn't have, first of all. I didn't have any kind of information about this. And so when I was coming out, I sort of didn't have a sense that there was this long line of people just like me that had fought for the rights that I now do enjoy, but had also created all of this culture. I think, you know, when you're young and you understand what it means to be queer or trans in any sense, you hear a lot about the trauma and how awful it was. And I think that's not exactly like a super positive or inviting kind of world to step into once you've realized that perhaps, you know, you're part of this community. And so when I started looking into it, I was like, hang on, we hear all about this kind of awful stuff. And yes, not to discount that, but we had incredible art, secret languages, secret codes, fashion, just so many amazing pieces of culture that our community created for us. And so in that sense, I think history can be a bit like a gift to people that are realizing who they might be, you know, their gender, their sexuality, how they want to navigate the world. When you can create, I guess, a book of history and say, hey, here's what's come before you, you know, we're really excited for what you'll make in this community. I think it just is a much more positive experience. And that when I started becoming interested in it, I was really like, I guess, shocked or not expecting how much there really was that I can now identify with and feel a lot of pride in. Everything from wearing a carabiner, which I'm not wearing today, but wearing a carabiner on my pants, or even just something as simple as like being into craft. That's got a really strong kind of, you know, in particular lesbian history. So I found that it was really kind of affirming and exciting and helped me shift from, I guess, shame or stigma or fear about who I was to pride, I guess. That's the word.
And I've said it many times throughout the show, but what got me is just how culturally accepted and celebrated it was. In ancient history, for thousands and thousands of years, it was part of humanity. And then when did it become bad and sinful?
It's so funny because when you look at each little moment that pushed us into a direction where it was sinful or looked down upon, all of the reasons for that were really silly and not about, you know, gender or sexuality at all. So, you know, if we go back to the very early Christian years, we know that in pagan times or pre-Christian times, homosexuality, that's probably not the best word to call it. I always sort of call it queerness because it was just sort of a fluidity, really flourished. It was even in certain ancient Greek societies part of, you know, the social order. And I think what then happened is because these people were pagans, in early Christian times, you know, they wanted to basically get power off the pagans, you know. So if we remember, if you grew up learning any kind of Bible studies, it was always about how persecuted the early Christians were. And so when that became, you know, a bit more reversed, the first thing that they wanted to do was basically say, well, everything that is pagan is wrong and everything that is Christian is right. It wasn't about the Bible or anything like that. It was more about like pagans have this social structure where, you know, men will have relationships with men and, you know, to an extent women would also have relationships with women. So let's just say that that's pagan and therefore wrong. So that was kind of like the first thing that was really arbitrary. And then if we get into kind of the 1500s where we have the beginning of the Anglican Church, that really was because the king at the time wanted to divorce his wife, all right? So...
And then created a whole new church.
He created that he was the boss of. So, you know, the Pope in Rome said, no, divorce is still wrong. And he said, well, screw you. I'm creating my own church and I'm now the boss of this church. And so what he then did was try to wrench power away from the Catholic Church. There were a lot of, I guess you could say permission or comfort with same-sex relationships within the Catholic Church up until this point. It was not something that, like, all relations with people outside of marriage were considered sort of sinful, but it was not really a massive problem.
I read, in your book you talk about bishops having relations. Yeah,
it was kind of, and I think there was that thing, and I know that there's a gender component to this as well, sort of a quite sexist component, but this idea of, you know, men seeking these relationships with other men based on kind of their spiritual importance and knowledge and that kind of thing, that was all kind of okay. But what what they did in the Anglican Church and what the king did was he basically said, well, not only am I creating my own church, I want the Catholic Church to stop having power in, you know, England. So he took a lot of the laws that were typically dealt with the ecclesiastical court. So if you were caught having same-sex relations and they might send you to be dealt with in the, you know, religious courts, and you might get a bit of a slap on the wrist. What the king did was he said, all right, well, I'm making these all civil. So now I'm in charge of all of these.
Right.
And that's when we got the first homosexuality law.
Mm-hmm.
And that homosexuality law has continued and is still in action in, any countries that were once under British rule. Often we still have this same law, and it was all just because this king wanted to divorce his wife, you know, right, a few centuries ago. Nothing really to do with gay people or lesbians, gender, queerness at all.
It's a bit, it's about, it's often about power.
Yep.
Yeah.
Really power.
Power and control.
Well, we touched on before as well about how we're now living history, watching what's unfolding in the US, erasing particularly trans people from official websites. Thankfully we have like books like yours in print that are going to preserve history. I mean, why do you think history is important to know?
I think because typically there's a narrative of history that just in general helps us understand things about ourselves. And I know that when I was growing up and being taught history in schools, there was this idea that what I was being taught was just kind of fact. It was just the canon of history. And it was really written by the people that had the power at that time to tell that history. So a lot of it is incorrect. I think when we look at what, if we're growing up in Australia, what we learnt about colonization and, you know, First Nations history is just abhorrent in how, you know, radically incorrect it is. So I think there's a bit of the same phenomenon then when we look at, like, you know, queer and trans history. But I think what it does do is it actually shows us that, hang on, what those things we learnt, there's more to the story, there's different perspectives, there's actually different, I guess, important milestones in history depending on who you ask.
Which is why your book's so important, because you highlight those people that have different stories. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think the my favourite part about it was finding people to talk about that weren't very well known, at the time or even now. But even still, so many people that did amazing things, it's impossible to find out much about them because... particularly if they were women, they often weren't deemed important enough to have a trial. And unfortunately, a lot of what we find, you know, in our history comes from court documents and things like that. So that means richer men get a lot of real estate in the history.
Yeah,
that's incredible. It's quite, to know that it's like every time we read something, particularly older books, there's a great thing to read old books because you get a sense of the time and what was important at the time. But also I'm concerned that there is stuff missing that I can't know what's missing with what you've just said now.
Absolutely. And I think it's finding the sources has been...
That's what I was going to ask. Sorry to interrupt. No, where did you... How the hell did you research this thing?
Well, I think... at least for the Australian stuff, your neighbours here at Joy, the Queer Archives, are very, very helpful.
Oh, yes, Aqua, yeah.
But I think most of it is you want to look at, I spoke to a lot of elders, so a lot of living memory. There's also a lot of letters, diary entries. There's also a lot of other work by historians. The interesting thing about putting this all together into a tapestry is that typically historians will have a specific place and time that they're an expert on. And those people are very generous with their time. I think it was like a day before Christmas, and there's a wonderful academic who specializes in the Pink Triangle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
He lives like kind of on the border of Germany, and it was like near midnight and we were having this discussion about the Pink Triangle.
Oh,
he's just really generous with his time. So I sort of spoke to a lot of experts in queer history and had to kind of weave those together, and then a lot of living memory, and then just looking at little glimpses of what I could find in historical texts. That was also quite helpful. So really this is a real kind of patchwork attempt at sort of bringing things together.
Yeah, but it's done so beautifully.
Yeah. That's real credit to you, the great book.
And how long did it take you to write?
I think about a year and a half altogether.
Yeah, wow. Well, we've got some promos, but we want to keep you here. Can you stay here for a little bit longer?
Yeah, I've got nowhere to be.
Oh, great.
Aren't we lucky?
We'll keep you forever.
This is where you need to be.
Okay, great.
All right, we'll be back shortly. Here's some sponsorships. You're on Joy.
Joy for you. Joy for me. Joy for everybody. joy.org.au.
You are on Joy 94.9. You're listening to Joy Weekend Breakfast with me, Jean.
And with me, Demetra, and our very special guest, Hannah McElhinney. Oh, my God.
Oh, you nailed it.
Did I like McElhinney? McElhinney.
Yep.
McElhinney.
McElhinney.
McElhinney. Oh, Janakopoulos. McElhinney.
Yeah.
Maloney?
Yeah.
And Hannah's the author of Rainbow History Class, your guide through queer and trans history. Demetra and I fell in love with this book and, yeah, we wanted to do a show on it, and Hannah has kindly agreed to come and chat with us about it.
And something that I'm going to be the Greek auntie now, very proud to hear, off air you mentioned that your book... Something about that in the US. Tell us what you think is going on with your book in the US, where books are banned, by the way.
Yeah, I believe this has been banned in many of the states undergoing book bans. Yes.
Congratulations. Yes,
thank you. That was really one of the goals.
Wow.
I feel like if it wasn't banned, then it wasn't truthful enough. Mm-hmm. so I think it's great. Yeah. And we had to, you know, I really wanted to make it accessible to young people who live in those states, especially because the cover of this book is quite vibrant, it's quite colourful, and I wanted it to be that way, but I also was cognizant that if you're living in Iowa, you might not be able to read this book on the bus or have it even at home on your bookshelf. And so I really wanted to create something that young people could read if they needed to or if they wanted to connect with their history. So I actually partnered with a independent bookstore in Texas near Houston somewhere and worked with them to create a fake dust jacket cover for the book, which was this really drab looking...
How to be straight.
Yeah, it was like, I called it The Years Gone By and wrote this kind of really vague kind of, I guess, blurb on the back. It was a lot of fun and it's dull. And so now, you know, if you ordered it through that particular bookstore in the United States, you could just click a button and it would come delivered to you with this like fake dust jacket on, which I think... made it more accessible. Sad that it has to happen. I had a lot of people say, oh, that's really sad. But actually, I think that's what it means to be in our community. I put a little lot of little in jokes on the back of that book, and really that's kind of, we're used to operating under the cover of Night.
I respect your audacity to do that. I love it.
Yeah,
and
it's great.
And really important, because I remember as a teenager going to my school library and finding, because I wanted to find out why am I feeling this way towards girls, and actually finding some positive books at the time. They were very scientific books.
Yeah.
Every Woman was the one that sticks out in my mind, an author called Derek Llewellyn Jones. And I, you know, really say thank you to authors who wrote in a positive way about me and what I was going through. So you're going to do that to some queer kid in the US, so good on you.
Thank
at
you.
Least
I
one
so. Yeah, I hope so. And I think the odd irony of it is that's where it's sold the best, is in, I guess, the Bible Belt of the United States. So
it's because when, you know, something's banned, makes you want to read it.
Yeah, I think it's like Eminem went on the radio. No, Eminem's mum went on TV like in the 90s and said, don't buy my son's record, it's absolutely, you know, foul. And it, yeah, obviously sold out.
I love that. But, I love Eminem's music, but, you know, this is so important for us to cut through what our American friends are having to go through. Now, you have a bit of history with Joy.
I do. I love it here.
Yeah, you were hosting here for a while.
Oh, yeah. Joy was my, I guess, a really safe haven for me when I was about 18 years old and I'd finished school and I was not sure what I wanted to do with my life. I was quite disenfranchised, I think, as a lot of young queer people are. And when I started hanging out here and eventually got a show, which was at the time about kind of independent music, and I stayed there for about 6 years, 7 years, and then, you know, did a breakfast show on Monday mornings. And then after that, did sort of another queer pop show for another couple of years. And I finished up here in, I think it was like 2016. And so it was, it was a really formative part of my early 20s and late teens. And I had such a great time here. But now it's so high tech. You know, you have all these screens. It's all digital. You don't have to force CDs into the CD player.
Yeah, you would have been CDs and cartridges and stuff.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah. And a big library of CDs. You had to go before the show and pull out what you wanted. And I was always getting, like, told off for being lazy about not sticking them back in alphabetical order.
Just the old queers being really bossy. That's all.
You know, but it was honestly great. So I'll do anything for Joy.
Aww. Oh, wonderful. Well, it's so important, isn't it?
Like, I still know the 0427 Joy 949.
That's it.
Burnt into the memory.
Wow.
Out there, that's listeners. Impressive. Hannah still knows, so send her a message. There you go. 0427 Joy 949 or email onair@joy.org.au. A few people have messaged in saying they need to get a copy of this book. So where can they get a copy of this book?
Any good bookstore. No, I think a lot of the indie bookstores have been really supportive. It's in the big ones too, and then also
online.
But, you know, as always, I always say, if you can get your local bookseller to order it in, do that. You know, Jeff Bezos has enough money.
Yeah, support your local bookstore 100%. They are going to be the repository of important culture, because we'll know, you know, like, to a large extent. And, and then there'll be some, like, your special bookstore in Texas that brings in the contraband books.
Yeah.
And also, who knows, Jeff Bezos, part of that, might ban it as well.
He might.
You never know.
Well, that's a whole other thing. But, yeah, I mean, it's easy for the algorithm, for them to design algorithms to
push the book down.
Suppress books.
Yeah.
For different reasons, not just if the subject matter is not good, but also financial. But that's a whole other topic.
Oh, yeah.
And you're writing another book.
I am.
And what's this new book about?
It's a bit of a U-turn, but there are some overlaps.
Okay.
So this book is a story. It's a bit memoir meets true crime. It's about alternative medicine based off a story that happened to my cousin who, sadly passed away undergoing a sort of dangerous, unproven alternative medical treatment in Malaysia. And really that descent into you know, from her being kind of misunderstood by, I guess, mainstream medicine. We all hear a lot about medical misogyny, towards being pushed down a particular wormhole. That's the name of the book, Wormhole, towards taking, you know, a really drastic treatment. And what I've managed to do is take that story and I'm looking at it through the lens of a lot of my research through Rainbow History Class, particularly around HIV/AIDS. Okay. So that's always been a really important part of history that I feel needs to be told from many different angles. Yes. Mm-hmm. And when you start looking at how, you know, even today, queer and trans people, lesbians, you know, who were really had to undergo lobotomies and awful kind of aversion therapies. And then, of course, gay men who also were subjected to that, as well as, you know, mistreatment by just, I guess, medicine, who were, you know, really feeling that this group of people who were suffering so greatly had brought it on themselves because of, you know, the fact that they were queer. When we look at that, at how disillusioned that our community can often be engaging with healthcare and medicine, this really kind of underpins the story that I'm telling about my cousin.
Yeah, and also women too, generally, especially with hormonal related issues, are often just dismissed as, oh, just take an antidepressant and you'll be fine.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's one of those things where it's easy when we hear people, like, there's a lot of kind of very fringe treatments that I talk about in this new book, but it's really interesting to put that empathy lens on how people go about seeking them. It's not that, you know, you or I might wake up one minute and be like, I'm going to sting myself with heaps of bees today.
No, not at all. You become so disillusioned by doctors and they're not right. They don't have the answers. And so you become so vulnerable, you'll try effing anything to feel better.
Yep.
And it's interesting to put that experience, I'm sorry for that experience and the loss of your cousin, but to put it in a context so that we can understand how this comes about.
Mm.
Because when it's focused in on a particular story, as important as that is, without the context of how it comes, it's hard to learn from it and be aware that in other circumstances, because, well, what's the saying? History doesn't repeat, it rhymes.
Mm.
So we pick up similarities of things that we're doing now, well, like just now, like what's happening in the US. Well, it's happened in the past.
Absolutely. I think that's the thing, this idea of history just in general being linear, or at least it's like linear progressive. It's just not the case. It's really a bit more, you know, swings and roundabouts. It's a lot more cyclical than I think we think that it is. And what I hope to do is, I think sometimes even I would consider myself, progressive politically. But even as sometimes I think people like that in this country will often think things like, oh, you know, people that go do all of that kind of weird anti-vaxxer or this, that, or the other, they're idiots, you know, or they don't know what they're talking about. And so it's actually about going back and saying, you know, there's actually a whole lot of like reasons why people, like queer people, like women, get to this point, and it's just a bit more complicated than us versus them.
I totally understand why the vulnerability that leads people to go down these wormholes of conspiracy theories, and if you're unwell, go down these wormholes of trying the carnivore diet or whatever it might be, because you're vulnerable and you are susceptible. You just want to feel better.
Yep.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. And is there a timeline of when you think this will be?
Yes, yeah, so it's going to be released in mid next year.
Okay.
So June, July, it's set for release.
And
so
how far along are you?
I've got about 40,000 words to go.
Cool.
What does that mean?
I'm about halfway.
Okay.
Halfway. But again, it's an interesting U-turn in a sense, but also not really, because it's still a story about, you know, marginalized or ignored people, and kind of giving those people a bit of agency in how they get to where they get to.
Well, I can't wait to read it because I've had my own health journey with hormone stuff and I understand the vulnerability that you feel. And I've gone down some whacked out, like I went on the carnivore diet. I thought and I convinced myself vegetables were trying to kill me. Because I was so just desperate to be well.
Well, context, history really helps us. I can't believe, but it's like 5 minutes.
I know.
Minutes
we
to
have
10.
To go because SatMag's coming on. But it's been so beautiful having you here. And when your new book comes out or if before, please come back.
Absolutely. I, you know, if anyone that wants to talk about history with me, I love it.
Well, how do they contact you? What's the easiest way?
Instagram. I'm on Instagram, Hattie McLeady. Anyway, anyone that can find their way to contact me, I'm publicly available and I will always answer if anyone wants
because
to chat.
Please, because we've only scratched the surface of what you've covered in the book, but just generally, you know, you having that experience that you're having and currently having, you're part of history. Your book's been banned, you know, in the US. So
and you've left a legacy. Good for you.
Yeah. I'm glad it's been banned.
Yeah, well,
grab a coffee before it's banned here.
Means it's important. That's how I take it.
Yeah, totally.
So good on you.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Wow,
thank you, Hannah.
Can't believe we're wrapping up another show.
We are. What's the wrap up? What's the takeaway?
Well, know our history.
Keep an open mind.
There's a reason. There's a takeaway is there's a political reason why we're suppressed from history. A big thing for me is how important fighting for fluidity of gender, like the binary, has been used against us for a long time.
Yeah.
And so that's my big takeaway.
And a reminder that, you know, when you read history, you might be only reading part of the story.
Oh, yes, beautiful.
Mm.
Hannah, thank you so much for joining us today. Joyster's wonderful you've been with us. Mia Waterman, our podcaster.
Yes,
amazing.
Thank you, Mia.
Thank you, Mia.
We love you.
And you too, Jean. Thanks so much.
Thank
again
you,
for this
Demetra.
Morning.
And we'll be back next week. You're on Joy.
5, 6, 5, 6.